Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is AB Dawji and this is, of course, The Big Picture, the program in which we shine the torch on the crazy things that happen in this crazy world. And you must admit that things are getting crazier by the day. We also expose the rogue politicians, the double dealings and the double standards and the double cross, and give a tight clap to the Ullus, the Laddus, the Alus and other assorted Mamparas. And as usual, we begin with some light stuff, weird and wonderful stories that made it into the media. The first one is about technology. Yes, folks, this is the age of technology. And the mind really boggles. Your cell phone is a mini computer. And computers and robots are doing a great deal of work that humans did previously. And they seem so much faster and efficient. Some of you old bullies may remember when you used to go and park your car at a mall. A chap at the entrance of the parking, well, he gave you a ticket which he stamped with the time, what time you got in. And when you were leaving, he checked your ticket and then took your money. Hey, that seemed like a very long time ago, eh? Today, you take a card from a machine as you enter, and then sometime later you put it into a machine before you depart, and it takes your money. Then at the exit, you put your card into a machine once again. And Bob's, well, actually not Bob's, Babu's your uncle, you are on your way, quick and easy. Technology, boss, technology. Anywhere and everywhere you find technology. What about when you want to go somewhere in your car and you don't know how to get there? Again, Babu's your uncle. You got GPS navigation, the navigator, the Garmin, the TomTom. And from there you have this nice auntie speaking to you. Hey, she's so polite. In 500 meters, turn left into Sparks Road. In 1 kilometer, turn right into Randall's Road. She is so polite and so courteous, never gets cross if you don't follow her instructions. Just tells you very nicely, please take a U-turn and go back. And you know what? As I was thinking about her, I burst out laughing. Imagine if it was an Indian chap in that garment giving you instructions. Indian fellow in the garment giving you instructions. He probably starts scolding you immediately. But he will start telling you, hey, I told you in 200 meters you must turn into a Sparks Road. What's wrong with you, eh? You can't hear. Put some olive oil in your ears. You keep doing this, eh? Never listen. But one day when I'm not here, then you will sit and think. Okay, now go back. I told you Sparks Road, now you're in Brickfield Road. So take U-turn by the robot, by Reddy's Vegetable Shop, and watch out, it's illegal to take U-turn. Check for cops, okay? Then stay in the right lane, because a big congestion on the left lane. Cars trying to get into Save-Rite supermarket parking area. They got a big sale there. Okay, now keep going. Watch out for that lady crossing and looking the wrong side and walking. Hoot and give a dirty look, okay? Now, check properly. Robot in front. Turn right into Sparks Road, okay? You heard? Don't make mistake this time. I won't tell you again. I'll just switch off and catch a DOS, okay? Then you are on your own. On your own. Yeah. What kind? You from supposed to be from Durban. You don't know your way around. What kind of alu you are, man? So can you imagine if a charo was giving you directions, eh? Killer and all. Okay. So let's get to the story. about technology. Well, the message of this story is, don't have complete blind faith in technology. Don't have blind faith in technology. A 69-year-old man in Germany was driving along in very bad weather on a very dark night, and he was getting directions from his GPS, from his navigator. And he drove right across the grounds of a factory, right in the dark and rain. Got instructions, drove across the grounds of a factory, and he landed in a canal. Well, the article says he managed to escape through a side window before his car sank into the freezing water. Thoroughly drenched, he walked along a road until a motorist stopped and phoned for help. The driver was taken to the hospital. Well, he was frozen, and his car was recovered from the murky water. Ah, shame, eh? So, don't follow instructions completely. Okay, next story. Now, people always tell me that you mustn't let small things in life worry you. You mustn't let small things in life worry you. Really? Maybe they didn't have a tiny stone in their shoe. Or now in the steaming hot days, just as you are battling, you're just about to fall asleep, tossing and turning, suddenly you hear a buzzing sound. It's a mosquito. It's a mosquito. That tiny insect can be hell. You have to put the light on. You have to get up. You have to find it and kill it. Otherwise, no sleep. People can get really fed up with lots of things. Here's a story from Australia. A neighbor was walking past a house in the west coast city of Perth on Wednesday when they heard a man repeatedly yelling, "Why don't you die? Why don't you die?" And there was a toddler, a baby, screaming. The neighbor then called the police emergency number, according to media reports, and they rushed to the house. The report says half a dozen police cars responded with lights flashing and sirens blaring. According to the police report, police spoke with all parties who advised that the husband had only been trying to kill a spider. He has a serious fear of spiders. The report said the man apologized for the inconvenience to police, and there were no injuries cited, except for the spider, of course, which was dead, and no further police involvement required. So, there you are. Chaos caused by an incy-wincy spider. And, of course, a man scared of spiders. And what's the word to describe a fear of spiders? Anyone? Huh? Put your hands up. Oh, I can see hundreds of hands going up. And who said that listeners of The Big Picture are not well informed? Yes, that's right. The answer is arachnophobia. Arachnophobia. Ladies, ask the buddy when he is having lunch. Just tell him, "Hey, darling, last night there was a spider in the room. I was so scared. Eh? I think I'm suffering from arachnophobia." Sure, that should make him choke on his acne. Eh? Right, now to serious business. Serious business. Today, dear listeners, I want to talk about democracy. Yes, 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 yes. I know, it's a heavy subject. So pay attention, okay? It's election time now, and here in South Africa, and everybody's speaking about voting. It's your democratic right to choose who will govern you, which party, and so on. Here are some very nice quotations about democracy. Here's one quotation. It says, "Next time they give you all that civic bull about voting, keep in mind that Hitler was elected in a full, free, democratic election." Ah, and what comes to mind in recent times is, of course, Donald Pagla Trump. And Winston Churchill said this, "It has been said, it has been said that democracy is the worst form of government except all the others that have been tried. Let's say it again. It has been said that democracy is the worst form of government, except all the others that have been tried. And Robert Burns said this, democracy is being allowed to vote for the candidate you dislike the least. Oh, yes. I think that gels with us here in South Africa. Most of us don't like all the parties for one reason or another. So Robert Burns says, democracy is being allowed to vote for the candidate you dislike the least. And George Bernard Shaw said, democracy substitutes election by the incompetent many for appointment by the corrupt few. Let's do that again. Democracy substitutes election by the incompetent many for appointment by the corrupt few. Ooh. Resonates, that's the word I was looking for. It really resonates with what's happening in our political climate. Wonderful stuff, this thing called democracy. Well, the Western world keeps telling us how good it is. And I suppose, well, in some ways it is good to allow people to decide who they want as their leaders. But the fact is that while the so-called West says that it promotes democracy in the world, the reality is that its behavior is just the opposite of this. Its behavior is just the opposite of this. So let's take it from the very top. The body that is supposed to look after the world, the whole world, to ensure peace and harmony in the world, and that is the United Nations. Question is it democratic? Do all members have an equal vote, equal power? And the answer is, of course, no. All final decisions are made by the Security Council, made up of just 5 permanent members: China, France, Russia, Britain, and the United States. Each one has something called veto powers, meaning if they don't like something, they vote against it and that's it. Khalas, it's blocked. Cannot proceed any further. Any decision, any resolution is blocked by a veto from one of these countries. So, there's your democracy. The whole world, all the countries in the world may want something done, but just one of these 5 countries can veto it. Here's an example. International law says that Israel should withdraw from the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which it occupied through war in 1967. And in 1967, a UN resolution was passed, then known as Resolution 242. Israel must withdraw from these lands that it occupied through war. And Israel says, go fly a kite. Go fly a kite. That's been since 1967. Israel has built over 500,000 homes for its citizens in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. The world says these settlements are illegal. And Israel says, go fly a kite. So how can Israel get away with it? Simple. My dear people, the United States will veto anything at the United Nations that is critical of Israel. So the bottom line is, there's no democracy at the United Nations. So in fact, the United Nations is largely impotent, largely useless in taking decisive action if one of the 5 members decides against it. But wait, hang on. One member does have power to do whatever it wants in the world, and no one can stop it. More power than the United Nations, and of course that is the United States. It can do whatever it wants, and no one can veto it. I'm talking about outside of the United Nations. The United States, whether you like it or not, whether you want to accept it or not, has huge power, military and financial, to bully the rest of the world. It can attack and invade another country, and you can do blow all about it. Blow all. It acts with impunity. And if it does not use military force, it can throttle you to death by imposing sanctions on you. And not only sanctions so that you cannot do any trade with the United States, but also if any other country trades with you, the U.S. will then impose sanctions on you also. So, it puts pressure on other countries not to trade with you. Sanctions. So, bottom line is, America is a law unto itself, the world's only so-called superpower, the world's bully. And as the renowned American academic, Professor Noam Chomsky, said, the United States is the biggest terrorist in the world. There's a very old saying, beware the Greeks bearing gifts. Beware the Greeks bearing gifts, carrying gifts to you. Be careful. Well, that should be changed to this. Beware the United States bringing democracy to you. Beware the United States bearing democracy. America brought democracy to Iraq, and see what happened there. What is the state of the country at this moment? Devastated is the word. And of course, right now it's bringing democracy to Yemen. And what a wonderful place that is, eh? And recently it has been bringing democracy to Venezuela. Oh! And how nice that is turning out to be. So today I will be focusing a great deal on Venezuela. I have many other topics, but I have to do this thing in some detail. Well, the Western media has been spinning the story that President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela is a bad guy who is an illegitimate ruler, because in the last elections he won. The elections, they say, were rigged, and so the U.S. supports another chap, a fellow who was quite unknown until very recently. And his name is Juan Guaido. Remember that name, Juan Guaido, G-U-A-I-D-O. Because you're going to hear lots about him in coming weeks. Juan Guaido is the man who the United States is backing. And the president of Venezuela is President Nicolas Maduro. The United States has been giving Venezuela a rough time for a very long time. But it really went full swing when Hugo Chavez was president. And Hugo Chavez told the United States to go to hell. I remember one particular scene, I don't know if I mentioned it last week or so, that Hugo Chavez was at the United Nations, and just before him, George Bush spoke at great length, and then Hugo Chavez, he's quite a funny guy, he went up to the podium, it was his turn, and before he could start, he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, there's a strange smell in the air. I smell sulfur. There is a smell of sulfur in the air." And everybody burst out laughing, because when you talk about the smell of sulfur, you talk about the devil being around. It's an old expression that if there's sulfur, then the devil is around. So Hugo Chavez said that there is a strange smell around here as he took the podium. He says this, in other words, the devil had just left the stage. Anyway, Hugo Chavez died some time ago from a sickness which, well, some people actually believe that he was assassinated, that somehow he was poisoned and so on. But these are conspiracy theories. There's no proof about that. Anyway, he had a very slow death. And then came Nicolas Maduro, who was his close friend, and he was elected in a free and fair election as president of Venezuela. But the United States said that he is corrupt and that he's also a dictator. And from the time that Hugo Chavez took over Venezuela, the United States imposed very strict sanctions. And when Maduro came in afterwards, the sanctions were tightened even more and more, and has virtually destroyed the economy of Venezuela. And yes, of course, its economy is very, very severely damaged. I want you to try to get hold of a book called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. The Confessions of an Economic... I think I mentioned this previously also, but you people don't listen. I'm sounding like that Garman character, right? He's The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Get it. It's about how the U.S. sends a small group of economists into a country and how they systematically sabotage the country's economy. Shocking revelations and fascinating. Get it. It was actually on the bestseller list of the New York Times. So, it is authentic, meaning the guy who wrote the book, his confessions are true. Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Let me tell you more about the shenanigans in Venezuela after the break. Okay, welcome back. The program is called The Big Picture, and I'm sure nobody will mind one more little ad. Why don't you join me, A.B. Dauji, on an exciting trip to Vietnam next month in the school holidays. Magical, mysterious, amazing, incredible Vietnam, 15th of March. And you know what? Just because I like you, I'm giving you a 4,000 Rand discount. Oh, 4,000 Rand discount. But phone me very quickly after 1 o'clock because we only have 40 seats. Right. Focus was on Venezuela. Right. So, yes, of course there was corruption in Venezuela. All countries have. It's the same story all around the world in every single country. But the United States and the West focused on corruption to an extent, but most especially on the recent elections in Venezuela, and declared that Maduro's election, or being elected as the president, was a fraud and therefore illegal. Well, dear listeners, that is a first-class lie. First-class lie. Let me unpack for you what is never reported in the Western media. It's absolutely fascinating stuff. Please follow very closely. Don't act bored and go and start cutting the onions in the kitchen or anything like that, okay? Please, follow very carefully. Here are 5 points about the elections from an article by Ted Snyder, who writes regularly on U.S. foreign policy. Now, we know that in the elections, Maduro had one opponent, and his name was Henri Falcon. And he beat Henri Falcon by a big margin, Maduro got 6,245,862 votes. 6 million, right? And Falcon got 1,927,387. So it's like 6 million against 2 million. So Maduro won overwhelmingly. But of course, the United States said that the election was not valid because of the low voter turnout. So let's get to these issues about the elections, which the United States says was fraudulent. Point number one, voter turnout was low because Maduro's opposition called on its followers not to vote. The radical opposition parties boycotted the elections and encouraged their supporters not to vote. There could have been a bigger turnout of voters, and there could have been an unboycotted election with candidates from every party for the people to choose from. You get it? If there was no call for a boycott, there would have been a huge turnout. And then nobody could claim that, hey, you know what, not many people voted, and you know, and therefore that election was no good. Now, Maduro had initiated a series of negotiations with the opposition parties during which an election date was agreed upon. So, Maduro spoke to the people, to the opposition, and said, oh, come. And they all agreed, okay, we'll have the elections on this date. The negotiations were mediated by the Dominican Republic. And the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister of the Dominican, and also the Spanish Prime Minister, José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero. So that you had the one country, Dominican Republic, and the former Spanish Prime Minister Zapatero were in this negotiation about setting the date of the elections. At the last minute before the agreement was due to be signed, the opposition withdrew and refused to sign. But they didn't do it because they didn't agree with the terms and conditions of the agreement. They did it because they wanted to claim that an election held without them was illegitimate. You see the point? You see, they wanted to pull out completely. So if the election takes place, they can say, no, 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 no. We all didn't vote. It was only Maduro and his party that stood for the election. So the whole thing is no good. Now, there is a professor of Latin American history at Pomona College. His name is Miguel Tinker Salas. He's one of the world's leading experts on Venezuelan history and politics. And he told the writer of that article that I'm reading from, he said that they did it in order to claim that Maduro lacked legitimacy. And of course, the boycott was strategic. There was a purpose for it. And the professor said that the opposition decided to abandon the election process in the country and adopt the strategy of international pressure to get rid of Maduro. So they didn't want to take part in the elections, and then later on, when they said the elections were no good, then they can tell the international community, all the countries of the world, to put pressure on Maduro and say that he must leave. That is why they would not sign the negotiated agreement, which was negotiated by Zapatero. That would have diffused the crisis. Zapatero himself, the former Prime Minister who negotiated the agreement about setting the date of the election, criticized the opposition's decision, saying he did not agree with the decision and was actually very shocked that the opposition pulled out. Now, we're getting to the meat and potatoes. Though that part of the story is sometimes told, sometimes it comes up about the setting of the date, though not very often in the mainstream media in the West, the main part, the striking part that is never told, is that it was the United States that told the radical opposition to boycott the election to create the appearance of illegitimacy. So, the United States told the opposition party, don't take part in the elections. The Venezuela government has accused the United States of pressurizing the opposition to withdraw from the election agreement in favor of regime change. José Rodríguez, who is Venezuela's communications minister and the government's representative to the negotiation, says that the then U.S. Secretary of State, United States Foreign Minister Rex Tillerson at that time, called the opposition spokesman Julio Borges and instructed him to refuse to sign the agreement. You got it? Right. So that was point number one, that when the negotiations were made to set the date for the elections, all the negotiations were on ready to be signed. The United States told the opposition party, don't sign it, don't be part of the process. Point number two, the American plan was actually bigger and it failed. Let's see how big the plan was. There is evidence that the plan was not just an election that was boycotted by the radical opposition, but an election that was boycotted by every serious opposition candidate. Now, what does that mean? That means the United States wanted the whole opposition, everybody, all the parties, to boycott the elections so that Maduro could only win an uncontested victory. That means only his party will be on the ballot paper, no other parties. An uncontested victory in an election that wasn't an election, in other words, could easily be presented as an illegitimate election that granted Maduro. And for example, if on the ballot paper you only found the name of the ANC, and so no matter who voted, people would say, no, that election was illegitimate because there was no opposition party taking place. No party. Though the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson of America, his call was successful at getting all serious opposition candidates except Falcon. Falcon decided no. He's not going to boycott the elections. It was also meant, the pressure was on Falcon to also boycott. He had the largest party and the most support in the opposition. It was meant to erase the elections. But Falcon did not join the boycott, and Latin American, South American expert Mark Weisbrot reported that, according to a source with knowledge of the matter, the leading opposition contender for Venezuela's May presidential election, Henri Falcon, was told by U.S. officials that the Trump administration would consider financial sanctions against him if he entered the presidential race. You got that? If you took part in the elections, they told Falcon, we're going to put financial sanctions on you personally. When Falcon not only refused to boycott, but reached out to other opposition leaders to sidestep the boycott and join his campaign, Todd Robinson, the top U.S. diplomat in Venezuela, he met with Falcon. So this American diplomat met with Falcon to try to persuade him to withdraw, as his challenge was undermining U.S. efforts to isolate Maduro. You see? He said, look, you must stay out so there is no opposition party in the elections. Those moves left little doubt that the larger U.S. plan was to hold all opposition candidates back, leaving an uncontested Maduro looking like the illegitimately anointed dictator of Venezuela. So if he was elected and only his party was on the ballot paper, then it looked like he's a dictator. Number three. Are you still with me? Hello? Please, don't leave the room now, okay? We get into the interesting part. Number three, the contested election, the elections themselves. There is no doubt that the boycott by the radical opposition kept millions of people from the polls, but the 46% turnout was low by recent Venezuelans. 46% of the people did turn out, but the election was not the uncontested anointing of Maduro that the opposition and the media portray. So, the media in the West says that it was an uncontested election. No, nothing of the sort, because one big opposition party did take part. Henri Falcon offered the elected a legitimate alternative to Maduro. Right? So there was a contest, and it is not the case as the media like to present it, that all the big candidates were barred or boycotting, leaving only the remnant, and that was Falcon. They make it sound like Falcon was not a very important part of the opposition. Falcon was not like a unheard of personality. The opposition aligned pollster, there's a poll that was taken by an organization called Data Analysts. They determined that there was a tie. There was a tie, right, between Falcon and Lopez, and also another guy called Henri Capriles. So there were three people in the opposition at that time, and the data was that Falcon was far ahead of these other two opposition candidates. So Falcon was a leading guy. It's not as if he was some unknown character. So the American failure to pressure the entire opposition to boycott the election left Venezuelan voters with a real election. So there you have it. There was a real election. Number four, the Venezuelan opposition, the U.S. and mainstream media the three parties, the Venezuelan opposition, the U.S. and the mainstream media called the 2018 election a sham, a fraud. But the evidence is weak and the source is, well, they got no source to back it up. The opposition was happy with the electoral rules and with the electoral council that confirmed their victory in the 2015 National Assembly. Right, so all the things that were in place for the elections were still in place in 2018 and the opposition approved of it. But the 2018 elections could have had the highest level of electoral monitoring. That means the monitors could have all been there as there was in the 2015 election. Maduro and Venezuela's UN ambassador, formally, they asked the United Nations, send your observers to monitor the elections. Right? So that you can see that it's free and fair. And in fact, Falcon from the opposition party went to New York with the ambassador himself so that he too could persuade the United Nations to monitor the elections. It was the other opposition parties, the boycotters, and some say the United States itself, who acted as obstructionists, and they asked the United Nations not to send in monitors to check on the elections. If they couldn't present the elections as illegitimate because it was uncontested, that was the first thing they wanted to do, right? By saying that there was no other opposition party there and all that. So the second attempt was to ensure that no monitors could be there to check whether the elections were fair. So this was the two-pronged plan or attack that they had. And then they could say, well, you know what, maybe there was corruption in the elections and so on. So that was the plan. But what the media doesn't mention at all, in the West in particular, is that even under the weight, the obstruction by the opposition parties who boycotted, the elections were not unmonitored. That means there were monitors there to check on the election that actually took place. At least four different groups of international observers monitored the election, including the International Electoral Accompaniment Mission of Latin America's Council of Electoral Experts, which is a huge body, well respected. And there was an African mission and a mission made up of four Caribbean countries. All four of them certified the election as fair. Right? The Council of Electoral Experts of Latin America is made up of former top electoral officials from throughout Latin America. So the whole of South America, all the top officials in elections, they were there. And it reported that technically up until today, we have not observed any element that could disqualify the election process. So the U.S. plan failed to prevent an election. The election was contested and it was fair. So what happened after the elections? There is also a striking detail of the post-election period that is never reported. This is never reported. The Venezuelan opposition is typically presented by the media as one huge bloc, which it is not. Anyway, I'm just going to race through this. And that small, tiny little group of opposition, by extremist group, which has been discredited in Venezuela. And so that group was represented by an unknown character at that time called Juan Guaido. Juan Guaido. Because they tried to form a coup and all kinds of... So, suddenly, Guaido emerged and declared himself the president of Venezuela. Nobody knows where he came from. Even all those opposition parties who boycotted said, hey, what's happening here? Where did this character come from? But they could do nothing because he was strongly supported by the United States and the West, and of course the Western media. So finally, it is not only as obvious as the media reports it that the people of Venezuela are united behind the opposition. Maduro received the votes of 31% of all eligible voters, more than Trump himself received in the 2016 elections or Obama in 2012. It is not even obvious that the opposition is united behind Guaido. So more trouble on the horizon. Can you see how the whole thing was, this whole propaganda effort against the legitimate president of Venezuela, and that is Maduro, President Maduro. So there you are, folks, the interference in the affairs of Venezuela by the United States to topple its legitimately elected government. So what's the reason behind this? Well, I don't have much time to give you the reason behind this. And one of the reasons is oil and Israel. Much to talk about. Maybe I will continue after the 12 o'clock news on the other radio stations, and that is Radio Al Ansar. But let me just tell you something very quickly, and that is, I'm not very quick, am I? And that is, you know what? I want to speak about democracy in South Africa, but I'll leave it for next week. Achim, you know what? The ruling party is worried by all these claims of corruption at the highest level, and how this will impact on the elections. Shocking stories coming out of the Zondo Commission. Bosasa had me on the edge of my seat every single day. Every day we heard new revelations. I couldn't wait for the next day. I kept thinking, what's going to come out of Bosasa Gusasa? And there's another thing. Load shedding. It's such a big irritation, eh? But one thing you can be certain of on the big picture, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, I heard this from a buddy of mine. This is what he said. He says, you know, I bumped into my friend Lucky yesterday. Shame, he's got only one arm, eh? One arm. He lost his arm in an accident. I asked him, hey, where are you off to, Lucky? And he answered, I'm off to change a light bulb. I laughed and laughed and laughed and said, hey, that will be a bit difficult for you, eh? And he said, not really. I got my receipt from Macro, you stupid moron. He went to change the light bulb. And here's a weather report from tomorrow. Here's a weather report for tomorrow. Cloudy and showers with a slight chance of electricity. Right, one last one for you. Ronnie went to the doctor for a checkup, and the doctor looked at him and said, hey, your face is all puffed and swollen and sweaty. Ronnie says, yeah, doc, it's high blood pressure. It's from my family. And the doctor said, is that from your mother's side or your father's side? And Ronnie replied, no, doc, it's from my wife's side. And the doctor says, from your wife's side? How can you get high blood pressure from your wife's side? And Ronnie said, hey, you should meet them. Then you'll know how I got high blood pressure. Have we got time for the last one? Yes, we have. Chota Mota went to a pet shop in Benoni. He saw a big, beautiful parrot perched on a rail, on a pole there. And the parrot had a red string dangling from its left foot, and a green string dangling from its right leg. And Chota Mota asked the owner, what are these strings for? And the owner replied, if you pull the red string, the parrot speaks Gujarati. And if you pull the green string, it speaks Urdu. Chota Mota asked, what if I pull both strings at the same time? And the parrot replied, hey, Gando, I will fall off the railing, you big laddu. Right, this is A.B. Dawji bidding you all assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.